Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised.
Loveline with Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew.
Well, that's almost right. This is Dr. Drew. That should be Adam Carolla, but I guess he's not here. Yes, it's Loveline. The phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. Please give us some calls. And I will try to slip through as many calls as I possibly can before Mr. Carolla gets here. The fact is, Chris is just totally cracking up. This is funny.
It's great.
It's great. That's cool. Right. It is great. So you guys will actually get a chance to talk, and I will get a chance to talk as well. The fact is that Mr. Carolla went off for his 40th birthday to Italy with Mr. Kimmel and that whole crew, and he cut it rather close, and Ann had warned him that he might not be able to make it back in time for the show, and he called us from the air a few minutes ago. So
unacceptable. Unacceptable.
I trust that the Carolla that does arrive will be appropriately humble, Adam Carolla, but I shan't get my hopes up, because after all, come on, let's be serious here. But anyway, it has been a nice vacation for Mr. Carolla. Those of you that have been listening all week, I was working with Stryker, and now this is even more freeing. It's just you guys and me, and we'll take a whole bunch of calls, so let's go right to it. This is Rebecca, 18. Rebecca. Rebecca?
Hello?
It's you. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm
telling you what. That
unacceptable.
I'm not as irritable as Carolla is. I can handle a little phone problem, but get to a place where you can.
Unacceptable.
We at least can hear you. This is Dora 13.
Hello.
Hey, Dora.
Hey, what's up?
You tell me.
I love you, Dr. Drew.
You are so kind. What's going on?
Well, my parents are, like, really strict.
Yeah.
And, like, my mom, like, she says, I'm going to be a virgin until I'm married, and I'm not going to leave the house until I'm married, and I wanted
to go. It's not a bad plan, by the way, but go ahead.
Well, yeah.
It may not be your plan, anyway.
I wanted to go to this college, this really good college, but.
Where do you want to go?
It's Lindenwood University.
Out there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And, well, actually, I had wanted to go out to California to go to college, but of course, she's not going to let me because that meant I would have to live on campus. And she's, like, Christian. She's, like, really, really crazy. And, you know, I can't kiss any guys until I'm married and all this stuff. And she's, like, going to want me to get married really young. And it's really freaking me out because I don't want to get married young and everything.
Did she get married young?
What?
Did she get married young?
No, she didn't. But she was, like, a crazy hippie.
Oh, really? How interesting. She went from hippie to religious zealot.
Well, yeah.
It sounds like she's struggling with her own issues. Dora, in spite of whatever criticism you want to levy at your mom, you sound pretty good, right? Yeah. You're doing okay?
I guess. I mean, I was sexually abused twice when I was younger. And
I take it all back. Are you acting out as a result of that, you think?
No, I don't know. I've only had one boyfriend before.
Well, you're 13. It'd be about right.
I know. But all my friends are like, oh, my God, you've only had one boyfriend. What's your problem and all that?
Well, here's the deal, Dora. You need to kind of slow down. Because you were sexually abused, because you have a mom that's sort of intrusive, let's call her, or at least controlling, it's going to be a tendency for you to be attracted to guys that are abusive or aren't available and these sorts of things. And the need for arousal and the need for a lot of excitement is going to be something that's going to be highly enticing for you. And that's what your mom is trying to fight against. And it's going to be actually good for you if she can contain it for a few years. At least wait until, let's say, you're 16 to start going to town, okay? Just kind of hang on for a few years. And after 16, make plans to go away to college and just do so. That's what you want to do. That's fine. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, I guess.
All right, no easy answer, but your mom has your best interest at heart. It just, she sounds like she's overdoing it in a way that's actually kind of traumatizing, it sounds like. But, you know, kind of hang on for a few years, all right?
Okay, thank you. All
right, take care now. This is Bob, 23. Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Adam? I'm sorry, Drew.
Drew, what's up? Adam, yeah. Adam, let's see. He should be descending through about 23,000 right now. So
hey, no, that's totally fine. This question probably is better suited for you anyway.
What's up?
Yeah, I'm 23. I live in Chicago. I have a pretty bad gambling problem.
Yeah.
Well, it's not bad. I mean, I win a lot. That's how actually I'm supporting me and my family. I have a 5-year-old daughter. I've gone through school, and my wife is currently going through school. Well, she's not my wife, fiance. I apologize. I'm just so used to calling her my wife. She's going through school now, and we live in a town about an hour and a half outside of Chicago. It's a college town. Her parents are very supportive with the kid.
Are you in DeKalb? You in DeKalb or something?
Oh, very good. Yeah, DeKalb. Yeah, we're in Northern.
I figured that was an hour and a half out of Chicago. All right.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's where we're at.
And?
She's originally from Naperville. I'm a little closer to the city. My parents are. Really what the problem is stemming from is in order to, like, support my lifestyle, I have to go, I mean, like, my family, I have to go about an hour into the city every, you know, every, almost every night to, you know, play some cards. And, you know, I make a couple, I mean, my hourly rate's about $225 an hour when I play cards. Yeah. So, I mean, I can't get a job right now, especially with my majors, to, you know, support my family like that. And
so what's your
question? Just doesn't get it. She just doesn't get it, and she's having a lot of issues with that. And, you know, I see my kid. I spend a lot of time with my kid. But she's having a lot of problems with me being gone every night.
She thinks
and I don't know what to tell her anymore.
Are you playing? What kind of game are you playing?
I'm a poker player. I mean, this is.
Yeah, I mean, poker has become almost institutionalized as a legitimate, not even just a sport, but a profession.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've been playing a long time. I've been playing since I was almost a kid. And, I mean, I've never seen it like this before. I mean, TV's done so much for it.
Well, I had not played in one of those crazy gambling. I thought I was going to go there and represent Gamblers Anonymous, and I realized that this has been sort of a highly structured profession for some people.
It really is no longer a gamble. I mean, people are respecting it as a sport and as a skill.
And so it doesn't sound like you are. Are you an alcoholic?
No, I hardly drink. I mean,
So you're really, this is your game. This is your skill. You're getting paid for your skill. And it has some
exactly. It's just me. Like, I mean, like, it's hard to justify it as a job. I mean, I don't try to tell my parents I played too much, but I mean, they kind of wonder where my money is coming from. In fact, I got audited twice in the last couple of years.
Wow.
And I've started declaring all my winnings now. So,
by the way, DeKalb, I know if Adam, just to sort of channel Adam's presence, the home of barbed wire. The first thing that I want you to do is when you get to Calgary, take you to the Museum of Barbed Wire and then point out that Cindy Crawford came from that town.
Yeah, I was going to say that's what you just told my bit there. Yeah, I was going to tell you that.
And as Adam would point out also, and she got the hell out of there as fast as she could. So,
I mean, I'm trying, man. I mean, this, like, she's going to school here now. And I mean, another thing she's pulling with me too is I got out of school in 6 semesters.
Yeah.
I mean, I tried doing everything I could to get out because I had a family. I knew I had my daughter and I had to take care of her, like, as quick as I could and get a real job. Although. Yeah. You know, I started my own company.
You're fine, right? You're fine.
I'm okay. It's just I just need to know what I can do. I mean, do you really see what I'm doing as a problem?
I don't.
I mean, like, she just has a problem that I'm not there every night with her. I mean, I spend as much time as I can with my daughter.
Yeah, that's a problem of any job, in fact. Although addiction is defined as consequences, there really has to be a connection between the actual act and the consequence, not just the lack of availability, because many other things could keep you outside the house as well. And I just don't see, and there's a progressive nature to addiction. This is a very highly controlled situation. I personally have never seen true gambling addiction without other forms of addiction sort of percolating along with it. So I don't think there's really a problem there. Rebecca, are you back?
Yes.
All right, much better.
Hi, sorry. Okay, my boyfriend and I, are you there?
I'm here, all ears.
My boyfriend and I, like, when we first got together, it was kind of just an attraction. I don't want to say that all we did was have sex, but...
Nearly all you did. You actually spoke on a couple of...
We had sex a lot.
Occasionally you spoke to one another.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
But now it's like, we've been together for probably almost 17 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a relationship where we actually care about each other instead of just having sex.
Right.
Only now we don't have sex.
Well, for some people, when they actually care about somebody, that spoils the whole thing. They're only able to have sexual when they feel that the person is either not available or somehow sort of bad, because they identify the sexual part of themselves as being sort of negative or bad or dirty. And as soon as it's somebody that they actually care about, that they actually feel intimate for, whoops, now all that bad stuff has to be hidden. And
okay.
And that comes from various kinds of traumatic histories and whatnot. The reality is that you have to, you know, these two things are supposed to go together. And also, the fact that you had all this physical passion can be a sustaining source in your relationship if you're able to kind of put it all together. But one of you or both of you seem to have a real problem with that. You think it's him?
Well, my question is, part of it is that, like, we kind of have an issue. Like, I'm not huge. Like, I'm not hugely fat, but I'm not a small person either.
So define that for me. You're not, like, medically ill. You're so obese.
I'm kind of, like, chunky.
I'm just average.
Well, give me the numbers.
I don't know. I'm maybe 5'5", maybe 165, 170.
I'll ring that up to about 185 in the almost part. All right. So
no,
I'm being honest. Yeah, that's all right. So you've got a, you know, you're not a healthy weight.
I'm not tiny. I'm average.
All right. And what's the, well, for, you know,
and
for the rest.
I don't have problems with that. I have very high self-esteem.
That's right. That's good. That's all good. Why bring that up?
Well, because I bring it up because he has problems with it.
Oh.
I don't, but he does.
And yet he was into you before. You were the same weight then, weren't you?
Yeah.
So what's the big deal?
I don't know. But I wonder, like, do you think that might be part of the issue?
No, I really don't. I think it's, as I said before, it's the actual being available for a real intimate relationship. You know, Jennifer Lopez got married this week, right? All of a sudden, pow. And I've been saying this for a long time, that Ben Affleck was actually available for her to have a real relationship. He's an alcoholic and whatnot, but he was brutalized by that relationship because she couldn't hang in a real close relationship. His disease spun out a little bit because she became sabotaging of that real relationship. She couldn't tolerate. She has to be with guys that are not available and bad, and now she's found one to chase after. And the antics will ensue. This is Jason 15. Jason, turn your radio off. I can't hear him. Just all right. You cut him off? Okay. This is Christy, 17.
Hi. I have, like, a really bad problem with, like, getting emotionally attached to people that I barely know. And I just want to know if, like, that's normal and, like, what I could do.
Well, it's common. I you know, it depends how you qualify normal. It's not a good thing. It can end up you being close to people that you really don't want to be close to. And is it people that you just – how does it work? Is it people that just – acknowledge an attraction for you, pal, you're in? Or is it somebody you have to be physical with first, then you're in? Or what are the circumstances that get you attached?
Just like any person, like a person that I meet or talk to. And like,
but what do they have to do? What does that person have to do to you to get attached? Usually they have to respond in some way.
Show like some interest towards me.
So any interest at all. They don't have to say explicitly, I would like to date you. Just the fact that they return conversation is enough for you.
Yeah.
Were you, like, profoundly neglected growing up?
No, not at all.
Where did you get this sort of sense that you have bad self, real low self-esteem?
Not really. Like, maybe it could be that I didn't have many friends when I was, like, going through middle school and, like, earlier high school.
Why is
like,
that? Why?
I was always, like, extremely shy.
And why? Why didn't you develop any social skills? Why didn't you have sort of a secure base to work from?
I don't know.
Just were things not going so well at home growing up?
Not really. Like, parents care, but they just never were, like, totally supportive of anything I did.
Give me an example.
I'm into, like, the arts and stuff, and that's not what they wanted for me. They want different things, and
all
they
right.
never...
So, all right, that's sort of a classic thing. When you express certain feelings, whatever they are, about your genuine self, and they go, no, you're not having those feelings. We expect these feelings from you. You're going to have our feelings instead of your feelings. And people that have those types of parents tend to feel empty. You have a lot of feelings of emptiness?
Yeah.
I, of course, can't hear Christy. Do you have a lot of feelings of emptiness?
Yes.
Yeah. And those feelings of emptiness can make people feel fairly desperate and alone. And, you know, somebody comes at you and it offers some sort of lifeline to an emotional connection, and pow, you're in. So you have to be really careful, Christy. And I'm not saying you have to be restrictive in terms of restricting your relationship with people, but you have to watch yourself. You have to just kind of, I think a really good way to handle this is to get a lot of friends. Do you have an opportunity to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Start building your friendships and get people around you who actually care about you or not into you sexually or as a boyfriend or girlfriend, because that can kind of go wrong. But develop friends, develop a secure base with them, and that will help you in terms of being able to contain some of these feelings of desperation. Heather, 14.
Yes.
What's up?
Not much.
Well, what's your question?
My dad was just put me on birth control because I've been having my periods 2 times a month.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if that could prevent me from getting pregnant when I'm older.
Only when you're taking the pill.
Okay.
It has no effect. In fact, it may have some health benefits. Aside from regulating your period and preventing you from losing iron, it decreases the risk of ovarian cancer and uterine cancer and certain kinds of sexually transmitted diseases. So it's all good.
Okay.
Are you okay otherwise?
Yeah.
Everything good?
Yep.
All right. That's it then. Take your pills. This is Carl, 22.
Yeah, how you doing, Dr. Drew?
Good, Carl. What's up?
Good. I got a question. I was in Vegas last weekend, and I was having a sexual experience with another girl, and we were having oral sex for about 2 hours, and unfortunately...
A whole bunch of things flew past me there. To say I'm having sex with another girl suggests that either you're a girl, or...
My name's Carl. I'm a guy.
Or that there was more than one, and this was the one that... You said another girl.
Oh, no. There was only one girl.
Yeah, and it was how does one have oral sex for 2 hours without releasing?
Exactly, that's my question. I know there's something referred to as whiskey, so on and so forth. And I believe I had a case of that, and I was having trouble with a happy release. So about 2 hours into it,
so you were so loaded, you were so intoxicated that your system wasn't operating normally.
Exactly,
all right.
And unfortunately, I got what's referred to as a case of blue balls.
I think you're more like no. You're more likely to get, like, epididymitis or prostatitis from all that.
What's that?
Do your testes still hurt?
Not anymore, but they hurt for the next, I'd say, half a day.
Yeah.
They were extremely painful. It was like a kick in the balls, but a lot worse.
Yeah.
And there was nothing I could really do, so we ended up actually going to a gentleman's club that evening, and that helped relieve a little bit of the tension. But my question is, what causes that, and what can you do to get rid of that blue ball pain?
All right, I think that's a bogus call because that's not how that works. But be that as it may, a release, it's caused by blood and lymphatic congestion from excessive stimulation without the biological release. So the release will relieve the tension in a hot bath and something called pelvic support, like wearing a tight white underwear bed, you know, the ones that support your nuts so the lymphatics can flow out, lying on your back for a little while, just things to help the lymphatics drain. And then, but if you're having something like that and the pain in the testes goes into the next day, that's probably an infection or inflammation, the epididymis, called epididymitis, which is a thing that sits on top of the testes, gets inflamed and infected pretty easily. So I would definitely look into that. It's an STD, basically. Kara, 18.
Hi, Dr. Drew.
What's up?
Not much, dude. Just wanted to let you know I finished crack today, and it was
dude.
The best thing I've ever read.
That is so kind of you to say that. That was a labor of love for me, and
it was so good. Like, I'm lending it to all my friends; they're all like excited now. Oh, I totally cried.
Oh,
okay.
That kind of work is. No one's ever really given the perspective of the caretaker, and I thought, it's pretty intense taking care of these people. And the reality is, Cara, I just sort of used myself as a metaphor, because it really took me more like 10 years rather than a single case to develop the opportunity to create good boundaries between myself and patients to where I'm more effective. But anyway, it's interesting stories, aren't they?
Yeah. Okay. Here's the problem.
Yeah.
I met this guy in like August, and we were like best friends, and we started going out in November, and he goes to college about 2 hours away, 2.5. So
Ohio State?
We were going out until January, when he kind of sort of brutally dumped me for pretty much no reason. And then he wanted to get back together, and I was like, no, you made a decision, we're sticking with it.
Well, that's good for you. Let me interpret that. What that means is he had another girl at college who dumped him. That's the story.
That's pretty much my guess. So he came home, I don't know, sometime in like February, just for, I don't know what it was, something with his family. And we kind of hooked up, like, not really hooked up, but, like, every time he comes home, I keep doing that, and I don't want to, and I don't know why I'm doing it, and it's driving me up the wall.
Well, let me speculate. You take good care of yourself. You've got good self-esteem.
Yeah.
You know this guy is not, that you can do better than a partial relationship like this. But you guys have something, that chemistry thing.
Yeah.
Right? And that something is not something to scoff at. It's also not something to indulge, but it's something to kind of keep in mind that maybe this is a relationship you want to get back to sometime. I would either S or get off the pot, as it were. I would, you know what I mean? I'd either just do what you do to support yourself by not hooking up with him, but realize this may be a bit, there may be more here than you are willing to admit right now. It's not maybe not even the right time in your life for you to be with this guy, but there's something substantial here. And, you know, and you guys are behaving like 18 to 20 year olds are supposed to behave.
This is true.
You know, you're not supposed to be stuck in one relationship and joined at the hip and stuff. You're supposed to go figure things out a little bit. But I kind of get the feeling that there's something here. So keep it, just keep thinking about the possibility, but try to maintain your boundaries in the meantime. Okay?
Okay. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes.
It kind of fits. All right. And tell him to, you know, treat you at least, whether or not he gets back involved with you or not, just to treat you more the way you deserve. All right?
Yes. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. It is Loveline. The number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. As you see, when I'm unencumbered by our comedic sidekick friend, we can get through a lot of calls. And yeah, I know. And they're good. And we get to learn some things and talk to some people and actually hear what our listeners are thinking about. And I promise I won't be abusive, which is something I can't promise. I was, however, looking to hear from Chief Running Water. Is that what his name is?
Whatever.
I'm getting pretty good at translating Algonquirque, whatever he's into. And I don't know if he's going to be here. He was in the air until a few moments ago, and hopefully he will be here before the show is over. He's been in Italy, as I mentioned, and he... You're right. Exactly. Let's go back to more calls after this. And it's Loveline. I'm Dr. Drew. Adam Carolla should be touching down at LAX right about now. And that means he'll be listening in on his drive over and launch into an abusive tirade about the time he walks through the door. So I'll be prepared for that. But in the meantime, let's take some calls. We'll take as many as we can before the show grinds to a halt when Adam arrives. This is Vanessa, 17.
Hey, Dr. Drew. How are you?
I'm good. What's happening?
I just want to know how effective the birth control patch is.
Patch is essentially as effective as the pill. It's very, very effective.
So if I, like, let's say I don't use, the guy doesn't use a condom, when I won't get pregnant, even though I'm using the patch?
If he's not using a condom, if you're using the patch, you don't need a condom. You're essentially approaching a 0% probability of pregnancy.
And is there any side effects?
Well, it's the same as with the birth control pill. The side effect profile of the pill is sort of depends on the person. Some people feel like they gain weight and get fluid retention. Others feel irritable. You can have breast growth. Some people lean out. It depends on the relative amount of estrogen versus progesterone that's in the pill, and then how your body reacts to those two chemicals. Most every woman nearly is different than others. So it's something you got to kind of mess around with a little bit and find the one that's best for you with the least possible side effect, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care now. This is Jamie, 15.
Hi.
Hey.
So I had an abortion this just past Tuesday.
Good times.
And I hadn't, like, bled a lot, and now I'm bleeding, like, through a pad, like, in about, like, an hour and a half, and I'm really beginning to get worried about it, and it's, like, cramping down there.
Yeah,
and stuff.
A pad an hour is a little bit excessive. There can be bleeding for up to 2 weeks after an abortion.
Right.
And it's considered normal, but the fact that you didn't have any, it's increasing, you're having pain. Sometimes there can be stuff left behind. Did you have a vacuum abortion, or did you have the pill?
Yeah, it was vacuum.
Vacuum. And did they do an ultrasound afterwards?
Not afterwards.
Yeah, sometimes they're not indicated, but sometimes they'll check to make sure everything's gone. And they can leave some stuff behind. It can get infected. It's a pretty rare complication, but if this bleeding goes on until tomorrow, it sounds like you ought to get back in or go to an emergency room.
Like, a checkup in, like, 2 weeks, because I did it, like, Planned Parenthood, because my mom and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's too long. I think that's too long. You got to really check it out tomorrow if you're still bleeding this heavily.
What could I do, like, right now to, like, help it out? Because it's, like, it's uncomfortable. Like, is there anything I can do with, like, stuff at home to, like cool it down a little bit, I guess?
You know, the things like Tylenol for the pain as much as anything. If you take anti-inflammatories, while it'll be better for the cramps, anti-inflammatories it could potentially make the bleeding worse.
Mm-hmm.
So I check your temperature, make sure you're not getting a temperature. make sure you're not getting lightheaded, you're able to take adequate fluids, and if the bleeding really stays brisk like this, where it's a pad an hour, then it's time to head on in, okay?
All right.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Bye. You know, I'm reading all the time about abortions and this absolute lack of there being a post-abortion syndrome. Every single time I take a woman's history, an adult woman, and she tells me she's been pregnant, and I say, you know, how many times are you pregnant? First of all, I get the look away four times and looking at the floor. And then I say, well, how many children do you have? One. Well, what happened to the other three? I've never interviewed a woman who went, I got a therapeutic abortion on those three. No problem. It's always shame and guilt and all these crazy feelings about it. And I don't think those are superimposed sociologically or from society. I think there is some sort of biological response that women have when the baby is removed. There's some sense of loss, some sense of something really happening that's far, far beyond anything that our sort of upbringing can put into us. And the fact that this is being ignored as something that really impacts women, not to say that abortion should be, the accessibility should be changed because of that, but women should be prepared for this, that they carry this forward, and maybe not with a bona fide depressive syndrome, but with a feeling about themselves as a woman for decades and maybe their whole life. I you know, it's never happened to me that a woman says therapeutic abortion three times and then doesn't, no further comment. Never happened. Maggie, 19.
Hi, Dr. Drew. How are you?
I'm good. What's up?
Okay, well, I've been doing heroin for about 3 months.
Fabulous.
And my mom and dad kicked me out of the house, and they also took me off of their insurance plan. Mm. And so I have Medi-Cal, and so I don't really know what to do about places. I mean, like, a lot of places just, like, they don't take Medi-Cal.
Well, why did they take you off the insurance? Did you blow through some hospitals?
No, like, I don't know. My mom just wanted me to become more independent. They took me off of their insurance before the heroin even started.
Why?
And, what?
Why?
I don't know. My mom wanted me to become more independent and learn about life more. I don't know. My parents are... And I mean, I guess maybe it was becoming too expensive for them, or I don't know.
It's funny, the classic thing that parents do is that they I'm not saying this is necessarily your parents, but things that parents often do is they foster dependency. They do things to keep you dependent, and at the point at which you're really ready to do some work and get better, that's when they pull the plug and make it impossible for you to do the work by taking away your resources, or, you know, so badly pulling the rug out from under you that you can't get going.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you are still wanting to get well, though, right?
Yeah.
You should check out county-funded beds. I'll recommend. I know you're here, live here in Southern California. I see from the screen. I would check out CryHelp and Impact.
Okay.
And also a place in Pasadena called Casa de las Amigas.
Okay.
And another one I'm thinking of, Pasadena Recovery Center.
Right.
These are all places that have various kinds of county funding and things that you have to wait a while for, but they can definitely eventually get you in. Wow. Okay, Geneva, 20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, my boyfriend broke up with me about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he's seeing some other girl. And we've done this a few times to where he's pretty much held us together. And we've gotten back together. And this time, he was leaving to go see this girl. And I gave him a hug, and I told him, you know, you held us together last time, so it's my turn this time. And I didn't let go. And he ended up, like, beating me up while I was holding on to him. And I wanted to know if it was my fault, like, because I antagonized it.
Well, no. Whatever, this is an episode of domestic violence. And it needs to be reported. Okay.
Yeah, no, I reported it. We're going to court. Like, we have a baby and stuff.
Yeah, this is that. This needs to be handled with the system and social services.
I mean, he told me to let go, but I didn't. And
were you hurting him in some way?
No, I was just holding on to him. Like, I lost my arm so that he couldn't get me off of him. And
for how long did you hold him?
Oh, it's probably about 3 minutes.
So it wasn't like it was 3 hours and you were kidnapping him.
No.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty awful situation. But Geneva, I bet sometimes you kind of distort how you report things generally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I don't know. What do you mean?
That you have trouble sort of, it seems like when you report how things happen magically, it seems that other people perceive the events differently.
Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, so it'd be interesting to hear sort of his version of the story, and maybe he felt threatened in some way. And it still doesn't justify him beating you up. That's wild. But here we go. This is Anna, 15.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I am obsessed with death and violence, and I'm really worried that it's maybe reaching a dangerous point.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Well, that's all I really think about, and I'm obsessed with serial killers, and I've actually started correspondence with one, if you can believe that. Mm-hmm. He was this guy who, ate corpses and broke into, and I think it's, the coolest thing ever, and I'm really scared. I'm obsessed with cannibalism, and I think, Nazis are the coolest thing, although I'm not racist, and I'm really worried. I don't know if I should get into a hospital or... I'm really, I don't know what to do.
Are you a trauma survivor yourself?
My mom beat me before she disowned me.
Okay,
and I stopped contact with her.
Yeah, it sounds like you want to get some help with this. This is a symptom of something. Something is definitely going on with you. And do you think you have manic depression, bipolarity, something like that?
I don't think so. I'm taking Lexapro right now for depression.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty much a stable person other than that, if you can believe it. I don't.
And I'm not going down this path with you because everyone who's obsessed with serial killers has got major psychiatric problems. I've talked to a lot of people that get kind of, particularly women, get involved with this. They get preoccupied with it, and I don't fully understand it, what it is, why women do this. And I'm not talking about the ones that idolize the guys that are in jail and try to marry them. I'm talking about people that just read all the novels or the stories about serial killers and stuff. But there's a lot of women out there that do that.
It's more than that.
No, for you, I understand. That's why I'm going down the path of there being something really going on here. You're obsessed to the point where things that are truly horrendous sound super appealing to you.
Yeah, extremely. Yeah. I'm afraid I'm really afraid I might do it when I get older. And I don't know if I should, if it's to the point where, I was talking to my friend just recently. She's my best friend. And I said, aren't Nazis great? And she said, no. And I'm what?
Aren't what great?
Nazis. And I'm like, she's like, I mean, come on, kill all those people. And I'm like, that's not cool. And she's like, no, killing's not cool. And that was the first time I realized that other people didn't think this way. I honestly thought everyone else was thought killing was cool. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I honestly have no gauge of if it's normal or not. And I don't know if I should go to a hospital or if it's so bad, or I don't know if it's okay or not. I don't know if it's bad.
Let me give you just some guidelines. It's not normal. It's not okay. It is a symptom of something serious psychologically going on with you. If you actually feel like you are inclined to doing something to yourself or somebody else, go to a hospital immediately.
I'm only 15, though.
Well, thank God. Thank God you're getting to this beforehand, before you actually do end up like the woman in Monster.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It can be treated. This is all about aggression and the ability to regulate things. It can be treated, all right?
Because I've done all this research, and there's been no real, true, they say, women serial killers. They're all black widows or angels of death. And, I don't really fit the paradigm of a serial killer.
I'm less concerned with you actually being a serial killer than I am with you having distressing symptoms that need to be treated. So please avail yourself of that. And if you need to be threatened with the possibility that you're going to become something awful, fine, be threatened with that and take care of yourself more appropriately. This is Jessica, 20.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. What's up?
Basically, my boyfriend and I were having sex, and which is something, it's not uncommon. We have sex a lot. And basically, he went, his penis, jabbed my insides or something, and it made, all my muscles tense up.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to stop, and I was just, doubled over in pain. And then, ever since then, I've just been having random cramping just kind of comes out of nowhere. And it's not really, really bad, but it's there.
How long ago did this happen?
How long ago?
Yeah.
Maybe, 5 days ago.
Does the pain go down your leg?
No.
No. Okay. it's possible that maybe he hit something that was already there, like a tube infection or even a tubal pregnancy or an ovarian cyst. It's possible that he merely just bruised your insides, quite literally, just kind of tore things a little bit. And there's very ligaments in the area there that can be kind of strained, quite literally, from this sort of activity. And yes, it hurts. It's a visceral pain. It can make you nauseated and vomit sometimes. But why don't you get this checked out, just so you can see what, make sure it's not something like a ruptured ovarian cyst or ectopic pregnancy or tubal infection, that kind of thing. Because, again, it may be less sort of a coincidence that he got his penis to a location that already had something else going on, and that's why the symptoms perpetuated, kept going. Well, it's Loveline. I thank you all for listening to me tonight. This is Dr. Drew. Adam Carolla is somewhere between 16,000 feet and the Santa Monica Freeway. He's coming in from Italy tonight. He went over there for his 40th birthday with his lovely wife and with Jimmy Kimmel and that whole clan.
Boy.
And it's been a great week without him. We've had a fantastic time. We've talked to lots of people, answered lots of calls, and I'm having one more night of freedom. And I imagine he will be here before the night is over. So those of you that like to listen to him, he will, I suspect, be here and launch into, as I said, into some sort of abusive tirade. And we'll hear all about his trip. And I imagine by the time he arrives, we get as many calls as we can in, because when he arrives, it's just going to be Adam talking. There'll be probably no more calls at that point. So we'll be right back after this. Hey, it's Loveline. I'm Dr. Drew. Adam is somewhere, maybe en route. We hope so, kind of.
Going through customs.
Is he really?
Yes.
He called you?
Yeah, he called Dr. Brian.
How long ago?
Just now.
Oh, there's no way he's going to make this show.
Of course.
Which is wonderful. This is great.
Call Stryker.
What? How dare you? Why do we need Stryker? Aren't we doing fine? How dare you?
I'm learning all sorts of medical
stuff. Unacceptable. Yeah, I know. This. I was thinking over the weekend, you know, when we've done this week without Carolla, and I was thinking to myself, oh, my God, this is why I got involved in radio in the first place, is to be able to talk about this stuff with people and sort of use the radio to communicate about it. Yeah.
If it was like this, I would have earned a degree in medical science by now, I think.
You mean it would have motivated you to do
that?
For
the last 5 years, if I've been listening to this, I think I would have deserved one at this point.
I know. It's true. So how are you, Anderson?
I'm good.
Are you? Are you going to tell everybody about your experience? No. Okay. All right. This is Loveline, LOVE191, 1-800-LOVE191. I'm Dr. Drew. Adam Carolla is in customs. He's coming back from Italy. I predict if we see him, it will be in about an hour. It'll just be to kind of say hello and to make amends for having missed the show. But I personally, Adam, relax. It's fine. In fact, maybe tomorrow night you want to take up to be awesome. Betty, 22. What's up?
Hello?
Hey, Betty.
Hi.
Oh, this phone. Thank God Adam is not here.
She said hi.
There we go. All right, what's up?
My problem?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm 22.
Yeah.
And, let's see. Started out, like, the first time I had sex, I was 18.
Yeah.
And then I had sex with, like, 7 different guys, and I was just having sex all the time and stuff. And I wasn't really enjoying it, but I did it anyway. And
why?
Then I started enjoying it.
Why did you do it if you didn't enjoy it?
Well, it was just, like, the guy wanted to, so I'd just do it. I know it's not good, but, you know. I figured I'd eventually enjoy it because sometimes I listen to Loveline and they're like, until you're like, when you're like 17, 18, you don't really enjoy it anyway.
Yeah, so we say that, first of all, you shouldn't be doing it if you don't enjoy it. And secondly, the only way you're going to enjoy it is in the context of a relationship.
Yeah, I was usually in a relationship kind of, but the guys weren't all that great. But then I got with my boyfriend and we had a connection and we got sex all the time, and then let's see, now we've been together 3 years, and the poor guy, he gets sex maybe like once a month if he's lucky, and he's very, very caring and understanding, and he's like, if you don't want to, then we won't have sex. And I try and do stuff for him, but like I'm just never horny, and I was wondering if there's that stuff out, like Avalamare or something like that.
No. Listen, all the research on even Viagra for women was abandoned because there is no connection in women between arousal and desire.
Really?
So women can have arousal. Like men, when they have arousal, desire is immediately connected to that. And in fact, not only just desire, but the train is leaving the station, it must be satisfied. It must have an opportunity to you know, that's how men work. Women can have arousal and no desire. And so the people that were doing studies on Viagra actually abandoned the research because it just was useless. Women, there's not anything yet that helps women have arousal because it is, rather desire, because it is such an emotionally connected experience for women. And having said that, that suggests to me that maybe there isn't that much of an emotional connection for you in this relationship. And you started when you're 19, you're 22. Maybe this thing isn't, you know. I actually have two reactions. One is, this thing may be over. And then the other reaction is, you sort of describe this guy as so nice, it's almost annoying. And for particularly somebody like you that has a history of sort of needing bad, unavailable guys, a super available nice guy is going to be a little tough for you to take.
Yeah, it's really different because my other relationships weren't all that great. They'd always, like, use me and stuff like that. But
I know, but that's what you wanted. That's what's more comfortable for you. That's what your dad did or whatever. That's where you're...
Yeah,
so you're,
that's what
you're,
my dad and my stepdad did. But
yeah, and so, listen, of course. And so to have a real relationship, you shut down all big parts of yourself, get shut off to that because you consider those sort of bad parts of yourself, or he might see things that are shaming in you, or you might evoke shame in the relationship. And that's not okay. That's not a relationship now. That's just sort of a holding pattern. And eventually you're going to get dissatisfied with that. The fact that he doesn't sort of make more of this is actually a problem because it is an issue and it does mean something. And I think, unfortunately, he knows that the writing's on the wall, that it means that this thing is probably not going to last. Not to say that it shouldn't, but at 22, it may not be time for this one to try to work it out.
But it's also that I'm also on, like, Effexor.
Yeah, that'll shut you down.
And Wellbutrin.
Oh, well, why'd you say so?
Yeah, and all these other things. And, like...
Well, what other things?
Well, I was on Risperdal, but then I stopped that because it was making me sleep till, like, a long time.
Yeah.
And... I don't know, I still have those problems, and I asked my doctor, and apparently Effexor does do the whole no horniness thing. But
absolutely, profoundly so sometimes.
She was like, well, it's all up to you. You have to want to do it and stuff like that, and I want to, I mean...
No. Listen, Effexor and many of the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, Zoloft, Prozac, Paxil, will shut you down to the point where sex looks kind of irritating. Like, ugh, like, well, why do people do that? Like, ugh. Just, and especially women get shut down completely with these medicines. So you might want to talk to the doctor about either just the Wellbutrin or Cerazone, which unfortunately is about to be taken off the market, which I'm just really angry about. Sorry, Anderson. And Remeron. Those are...
I've had Remeron. That made me really nauseous and sick.
Okay.
And the Wellbutrin gives me night sweats.
All right. Well, so again, this is something you've got to kind of work with. So you find a medication that works for you.
Okay, and also, like, for the fleeting moments that I do all of a sudden randomly get horny and stuff, we tried to get, like, a toy because my friend was like, oh, well, you have to figure out what feels good for you, and then you'll actually want it instead of, like, because I don't think I've ever really had an orgasm.
Uh-oh.
And so he was like, well, once you have one, then you'll want to have sex. And I'm like,
He said that? He said that?
My friend said that.
He?
Yeah.
Your friend he?
Yeah, I have more guy friends than girlfriends.
Yeah, but he doesn't know what the hell. Come on, you have a 20-year-old guy telling you how a woman responds biologically. No way. Here's the deal. It is extremely difficult to have an orgasm on these medications. The first thing I said about the psychological circumstances, whether or not this thing is over or not, or whether or not you're able to tolerate a close relationship or not, none of that is relevant if you can't respond biologically. You've got all the cards stacked against the relationship, and there are psychological issues that may come to bear here. But for God's sakes, it's just ridiculous to try to work things out when there's no possibility of biological responsiveness. So you've got to talk to your doctor about switching medication. You have to use something that allows you to be biologically responsive sexually. Weighed against the risks of your psychiatric problem, of course. So I'm not presuming to tell you exactly what to take, but talk to your doctor. It's not acceptable to have your relationships destroyed by these medications. That is not considered a remission from depression. That's considered a continuing problem with depression, because after all, in depression, one of the things that suffers is intimacy. And the depression may pull apart the intimacy, and then the treatment of the depression can do the same thing. So you have to really pay attention to that and ask your doctor to give you something that is appropriate. 1-800-LOVE-191. I'm Dr. Drew. I'm having fun. I hope you guys are interested in what we're talking about tonight. I'm getting through a bunch of calls. Adam will be back tomorrow. I really don't think he's going to be in tonight, or if so, it'll just be a few minutes at the end. And we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Yeah, it is Love Line. 1-800-LOVE-191. I'm Dr. Drew. Adam Carolla may be stopping by tonight. I hear he's stuck in customs, having just gotten off a plane in Alitalia or some God knows what. And we, in the meantime, those of you who are listening and calling, we will just get some work done here. So let's get right to it. This is Robert, 24. What's up?
Hey, Drew. You're doing a great job tonight, buddy.
Thank you.
Really appreciate everything you've done. You've been in my life for about 10 years now. I really appreciate it.
You're gay.
I hope. Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Anderson.
Yeah. Yeah, Anderson, we've been carrying on this illicit love affair, Robert and I, from New York.
Anyway, yeah, basically, I'm just probably someone you deal with a lot. You're typical, just 24-year-old alcoholic, blah, blah, blah. I basically just drink throughout the day. But for me, it just doesn't seem to catch up with me. My career is going great. Life's going
great. You haven't had consequences yet.
Yeah, and I don't understand that, because I know people who do what I do for 6 months and their life is over.
Yeah.
For me, my life just continues, and I mean, I literally couldn't go in for treatment right now because it would ruin my career. I mean, everything is going so well for me, and I don't understand what I have that others don't have. And my basic question is that what am I doing to my actual health? I understand I need treatment to get over this one, but my actual health, like, what am
I doing? You are what Adam would call a heavyweight.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
you can tolerate
exactly,
all this.
Exactly, yeah.
And I wish I could say that by you doing this at such a heavy clip for a long period of time, you're necessarily going to be more at risk for medical problems. That's not necessarily the truth. For instance, women are at, say, a 5 times greater risk of getting cirrhosis than men. So a woman drinking modestly at a relatively short period of time is much more likely to get cirrhosis than a man. For you, liver disease is obviously one of the consequences. The other thing we worry about is the neurobiological consequences. Alcohol is one of the unusual drugs of abuse in that it is a direct toxin to essentially every tissue in the body, but particularly brain. It can put you at risk for cancers of the mouth, throat, colon, prostate. So it has health consequences. Do you smoke also, cigarettes?
Yeah, I smoke about a pack a day.
Yeah, so smokers who drink heavily are particularly at risk for the mouth and throat and esophageal cancers. And there you go. You know, it will get you. It's not as though you're going to be able to skate on without any consequence. There will be some price to be paid for this. How big a price? I can't say. Will it shorten your life? I can't say. Will it eventually be something that has consequences that you cannot contain? Guaranteed. When? I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow or 10 years from now. But you seem to understand that, so at least you're alert to doing something about it when you're motivated to do so.
I'm just wondering if I can pull it off.
Well, you can pull it off for a while. It's a disease. It will pull you off eventually. It will pull you right off the road, and you'll see. You'll see.
Drew, thank you very much. You've been truly great in my life. Thank you.
All right. Well, good luck. Just when the time comes, please. It's very simple. Very simple to get over alcoholism. Just go to a meeting, thank a sponsor, follow directions. That's all you got to do. Got a note up here from Anderson that we should try Cyber Adam. What do you think, Anderson? A little Cyber Adam? Or is that from Brian?
That's from Dickhead over here, yeah.
So you don't think we should?
Well, I just, it would make me work, but I'm down.
All right, this is a good call for a cyber Adam right here. Jocelyn, 18.
Yes. Me and my boyfriend, whenever we have anal sex, I tend to queef a lot.
He's a big boy.
Yes?
Excuse me?
No. Queefing from the vagina? There could not be a worse time for this phone to blank out than right there. With
no, that's
question.
Her. She's blanking.
Oh.
Hello?
The air comes from the vagina?
Mm-hmm.
Good times.
So you're having anal sex and air comes out the vagina?
Yes.
So probably that's from you constricting the muscles of the abdominal wall and pushing air out, right?
Hey, it takes all kinds.
It does indeed. Jocelyn.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hearing me? Do we have a connection problem here?
I think we do. You're cutting out a little bit.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Fact is, what am I going to do? Yeah, fine, you make noises when, you know, you can maybe you're having intercourse, vaginal intercourse before the anal, and that's how the air gets in there. Or maybe you need to relax the muscles of the abdominal wall so you don't push air out.
You bitch!
Indeed. Mike 20.
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Hey, Mike, what's going on?
What's going on, man? You guys are awesome. Lately, I've been having some flashbacks. Said I haven't done that in about 5 years. Usually when I get nervous, I just buckle down and I feel like I have to urinate really bad.
Wait, you've said like three different things I can't understand.
It's a bad connection.
You haven't done acid in 5 years?
Yeah, it's been a while since sophomore year in high school.
And how many times do you do acid?
4 times.
And what are the flashbacks you're having?
Like, I have to urinate. Like, I felt like when I first did it, I had a bad trip where I had, like, I thought I pissed my pants.
Somehow, so, for you, a flashback is the urge to urinate?
Yeah, like, I would, like, get so nervous, like, my feet will get wet, you know, typical, I don't know if I'm just nervous, like, when people around me at work.
Yeah,
this kind of nervous right now for a spot.
LSD flashbacks are essentially, by definition, visual hallucinations.
Okay.
Okay. So you're not having flashbacks. You're having some sort of panic attack.
Okay. Is that what it is then?
Yeah.
It actually happened on Friday. And it happened a couple times last month, too.
Where you feel real panicky, right?
Yeah, I get really scared. I just can't sit down. I have to walk around.
Yeah, that's a panic attack. That's something that's pretty easily treatable. You got to see a doctor. They can treat that. Don't let them put you on any benzodiazepine medications. They can lead to addiction. But whether or not you're depressed causing the panic, or whether this is some kind of sequelae of pot or hallucinogens, there can be panic caused by those drugs. There are medications that can help with that. And then therapy can be useful, too, if you're interested in that. Monique.
Hi.
Is it Monique or Monique?
Monica.
Monica, 16. What's
Monica,
up?
Monica, whatever.
Monica, got it.
Yeah. I was molested in my early years, and I'm only
good
attracted
times
to older men.
Right. Was it an older guy that molested you?
He had to have been maybe 18, 19.
Right. And you were how old?
I was about 6 years old.
Fantastic.
And I want to know, how does me being molested tie into the fact that I only like older men? I mean, I can't get attracted to guys my age, even a little bit older. I just can't.
How old are the guys you're attracted to?
I've always been attracted to them, but I've never acted upon it. And I just recently broke up with my boyfriend. Well, he was actually 27 years old. Mm-hmm. He was the first older man, let's say, I've ever dated.
So he's a criminal.
Well, he didn't know. That's the thing, is that I look very mature, and I act very mature.
What did he do when he found out you were 16?
We haven't spoken since.
Since he found out you were 16?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm going to take it back. Maybe he's not as bad as I think he is.
No, he's not.
All right. Well, the interesting thing will be to see if you are still attracted to guys in their late teens and 20s when you're, say, 40. Whether or not the preoccupation is with the age of the kind of person that molested you, or is it just the distance from the age distance from where you were at 6 that you find attractive? For the most part, it tends to be that there's people that you feel are much older than you, and that's the way that whole molestation is experienced. Why that gets wired into your brain that way, I'm not sure anybody can tell you with great accuracy. It is something about shattering your ability to regulate experiences, to understand and come to terms with experiences, that leaves what's called an implicit memory, some sort of imprint on the brain mechanisms. Some people call these things love maps. There's many different ways these are conceptualized, but this has not been completely worked out neurobiologically. The fact, though, is simply that those experiences that shatter your ability to sort of understand and cope with an experience leave a remnant behind that becomes a source of attraction. When these shattering experiences are interpersonal, particularly when they're at the hands of people you sort of rely upon and need for nurturance and love, like parents, caretakers, that sort of thing, it shatters you, leaves an imprint, and becomes a source of attraction. Once you hit puberty and young adulthood, you start going after those guys that were the perpetrators of the original abuse. Some people used to think about it as something that was an attempt at mastery, like you were going to go, this experience was overwhelming, and therefore you had to get back to it to sort of make it right. But of course, when you choose the kind of person that perpetrates that, you don't make it right. You just end up reenacting it all over again. That's not quite it. That's not quite it. There is really clearly some more biological piece to this that we're slowly coming on to, and it's not been fully worked out yet. Justine, 18.
Hi.
Justine.
Yeah.
I'm sneezing. What's up?
Well, I have a problem with my breasts.
Mm-hmm.
My nipples, they tend to, like, go in instead of out, and I don't know why. And I don't know. I was wondering if it was kind of a big problem or not.
Not a big problem. There are, my understanding is, procedures that can help tease it all out. But you know, why? Is it you getting irritated? Are there problems with it?
No, it's just kind of embarrassing, I guess.
No, it's fine. Listen, believe me, you will. There was some guy will prefer that. Really, guys have. Every guy has his zone. There's some guy that's going to be particularly into that, and you'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Don't. If you want to consult with a plastic surgeon just to see what can be done, that's fine. But I wouldn't rush right out. It's not a medical indication for it that I'm aware of. If there's no irritation, David, 18.
Yeah. I have like 7 penis piercings right now,
yeah.
And I had 2 diodes, and I don't know if you know what that is.
No, what is it?
Well, on the head, like, it goes in the bottom of the head, and then it comes out kind of, like, about, like, a quarter of an inch up. And and I took it out, and the scar, it was about 6 months ago, and the scar tissue pretty much went away. Like, it's almost gone, but it keeps on randomly reopening, and it'll bleed, like, it'll bleed a little bit. And it kind of looks like when a scab falls off, the weird skin that's on top of that's left over,
yeah.
That'll randomly come up. And
so what's your question?
Well, I wanted to know if that's like a very big deal, because I've had...
it's a big deal. It's your penis, and it's got a non-healing wound on it with something called proud flesh. That's what that sort of pink, puffy stuff is.
It's not really pink. It's kind of like whitish and like dry. It's really dry on one spot. I think what it is that it like just cracks, and the cracking.
Look, you've got a non-healing wound.
Yeah,
non-healing ulcer. That is a serious thing, and it's on a part of your body that you can't. What we call debris. You can't go in and cut it all apart and cut it out.
Right.
Or in fact, that may end up. Happening to you, that may be what needs to happen. So you need to see a urologist immediately. And
but
they
goes
may have
away
to
for long periods of time, and then it comes back.
David, cut it out. You've got a wound that doesn't heal, and a part of your body where you can't afford to waste any time or space with that sort of thing. If you want to go to a wound center, do. But I suggest you see a urologist immediately. These are could be potentially very, very serious surgical problem. This piercing, for God's sake, it's not like it's nothing. You just think about any other part of your body. I'm going to put a rod through my arm. I'm going to put the rod. No, actually, this pen, I'm going to put it through the bicep muscle, have it out the other side, because I think that looks cool. Now, should some bacteria get in there and erode the muscle? We're biological beings. We're not pin cushions. Come on. Steve, 24, what's up?
Hi. I had a question about prostate cancer.
Prostate cancer, right?
Mm-hmm. All right. I had it when I was 2 years old.
Prostate cancer?
Uh-huh.
Wow. I've never even heard of that in a child.
It was actually the tissue around the prostate. It's called rhabdomyosarcoma.
That's not prostate cancer. That's a muscle cancer. It's a smooth muscle cancer. Rhabdo means muscle.
Okay.
I beg your pardon. Myo means muscle, and sarcoma is a soft tissue tumor. Prostate cancer is called an adenocarcinoma. It's a totally, totally different thing.
Okay. Right now, I guess I have a bunch of scar tissue from the chemotherapy I had.
Did you have radiation or chemotherapy?
Both.
Well, the scarring is from the radiation.
Okay. I've seen a bunch of urologists, and they don't seem to be able to really help anything.
They just
give me a bunch of pills, like painkillers and stuff.
Oof, oh boy.
And they had me on Oxycontin for about 4 years.
Yeah, boy.
And I wanted to know if there was like some kind of surgery I could have
or something to just kind of get rid of it, because I'm kind of getting sick of having to take all kinds of pills.
Don't you think they would have told you if there was something?
They go back and they've tried a couple of things, but it really didn't help. And well, I don't.
Steve,
I really,
do you think they're withholding something from you? That they have some plan?
I go through HMOs, and they've often told me that they're only allowed to spend a certain amount of time per patient.
Right.
And it just doesn't seem like they, when I was little, it seemed like they wanted to help and take care of it. And now it's just kind of like, here, take a painkiller.
Well, it's probably because there isn't anything they can do. You can always go to, you can always demand consultation with higher and higher levels of consultants. You know, go to a teaching hospital, that sort of thing. Head up to see your open friends. They'll go up to Stanford and get a consultation with the Department of Neurology up there. But it's not as though people think that somehow there's magical procedures that if, you know, my doctor doesn't. We pretty much all doctors know all things that are available. Now, there may be controversial, there may be just sort of judgment calls in certain areas, and you may want to consult with other people in the proper course, but it's not as though somebody's going to have some magic treatment that other doctors don't know about. That's just not the way it works these days. And, you know, you had a really deadly cancer. Rhabdomyosarcoma is a really, really serious cancer. Thank God you were cured. That's amazing. Tess, 18.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
I recently had an ovarian blood cyst that was, like, really near the surface of my vagina, and they cut me open and removed it. But it was
they cut you open,
before.
Your abdominal cut.
What?
They cut up your abdomen?
No, they cut up and they actually cut in the vagina.
They cut or they put a needle through the vagina and drained the cyst?
They cut open. They put me completely under.
Okay.
And I had to have stitches. But I haven't been able to feel, like, anything down there. Like, my sex is totally lost. Everything. Like, I have no drive anymore.
Are you on new medication?
No. I'm on the same medications I've always been on, which are Zoloft and Neurontin.
We heard me talking earlier, Zoloft will completely shut you down. So it could be somehow, I don't see how maybe the circulating levels of that have changed with the anesthesia or something. There's nothing about a vaginal procedure that should cut you, you know, make it impossible for you to feel anything unless you had a history of sexual abuse and somehow this was kind of a post-traumatic stress reaction to that.
Well, I was raped by, like, my best friend's brother when I was 11.
Okay, well, that's sexual abuse. And sometimes people... Was it a painful rape?
It was so painful that I actually was able to kick him off me and get out of the room.
Yeah.
Because it hurt so bad, and I just... My whole body seemed to react to it.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's actually good. The fact that you were able to fight for, you know, come to your own defense that way and fight him off. Perhaps having this somehow triggered some sort of post-traumatic stress reaction. It doesn't even make sense. Usually when kids are under the age of 5, when they have painful rapes and things, they can actually dissociate from parts of their body. It's hard to imagine how at 11 this could happen now. Did you talk to your doctors about this?
I've talked to, like, I went back once for a checkup to my gynecologist.
Yeah.
But she said everything was fine, and then I haven't really talked to my psychiatrist about it.
Well, you need to talk to both of them again about it. I don't have a clear notion of what's going on here. There should be no nerves that they get involved with. I guess it's a possibility, but there shouldn't be anything they get involved with that way. I worry that the Zoloft somehow is affecting you differently because of the anesthesia. I worry that somehow the trauma has been reactivated and you're sort of dissociating from parts of your body because of that. All of these things are a possibility, but the first and foremost thing is to check with the gynecologist about some sort of mechanical problem that you might be having. This is Catherine, 20.
I wanted to ask you about legal action against my molester.
Yeah, you sound like you're about...
Pardon?
11.
I'm 20.
You're 20. Did your molestation happen when you were about 11?
It happened for 3 years, between the ages of 9 and 11.
Interesting. Okay, and you want to take action against this guy?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's just the thing is, I think that I might have hindered my defense because there are some, I guess you call it, evidence that has been destroyed. Recently, my mother moved out of the house that they shared together, and they got a divorce recently.
Yeah.
And there was, like, 4 boxes of pornography that she just threw away that he owned.
Child pornography?
I don't know. I didn't look through it. Well, I think it was mostly like barely legal type stuff.
Yeah, see, that's the stuff I think would be useful for you. But anyway, listen, Catherine, I don't know anything about mounting a prosecution of this sort of thing, whether or not it's something that it's easy to do or impossible to do. I imagine it's pretty darn hard to do 10 years after the fact. But I certainly think it's a reasonable thing to do. It might help you in terms of dealing with all this. And it certainly puts this guy on notice, particularly if he's pursuing child pornography or other kids out there. God knows, this isn't something that guys get out of their system. This is your father, effectively, and he's abusing you. God knows what he does to other kids. This is something that you could be doing a great service, not just yourself, but other people, by at least calling this guy out, if nothing else. All right, good luck, Catherine. It's now time for us to take another break. It's Loveline. The phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. I'm Dr. Drew. I've just been notified that we're not going to hear from Adam Carolla tonight, so we can continue to address your problems for the next 40 minutes uninterrupted. And we will do so after the break. Yeah! And it's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. We're taking a novel approach tonight. We're focusing on the callers. Imagine that. Yeah, how about that? Let's go right to it. Dave, 22, what's up?
Hello?
Hey, Dave.
Pretty good, how are you doing?
We're good, what's going on?
I'm just curious. Me and my girlfriend, like, she only lost her virginity about 9 months ago. Mm-hmm. And, from me. And since then, like, actually before then, it was really easy, you know, to make her orgasm, especially multiple times. And,
Hold on. Before what?
Well, excuse me?
Before
she lost her virginity.
So you were doing that with oral sex, or what were you doing?
Yeah, oral and just, you know, contact without intercourse.
Okay, all right.
And so since after that and since she's lost her virginity, sometimes it's a little bit more difficult to get her to orgasm than to get her to come. Yeah. And so I'm wondering if there's something that is just desensitized. I mean, is that possible? To get like kind of a nullifying of the sensitivity there?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. And is there any difference between ejaculatory fluid and like what is, I've heard this called as squirting?
No, that's the same thing. And sometimes that's urine. There's obviously a difference between urine and ejaculation. But yeah, some women squirt every time they orgasm. Some do occasionally and some do never. We've kind of interviewed a group of women here that had this talent, and we found out that for most women, they had difficulty telling when they were having the kind of orgasm that would make them ejaculate. It wasn't as though it was necessarily more intense, though some did say it was more intense.
And was it anything to do with a clitoral or a vaginal
no,
orgasm?
No, they couldn't say anything like that, no. It seemed the way they're describing it was more in the sort of vaginal realm.
But so, it's all the same fluid.
It's all... What's going on? Why all this interest? What's the problem?
Well, we were just curious because, I mean, sometimes, you know, when she, after she ejaculates, it smells similar to urine, and sometimes it's more of like a watery, like liquid type of fluid. So
maybe that is urine.
We didn't know if possibly it was urine or, you know.
Maybe she does all of them. Maybe she does orgasms with and without urine, with and without glandular fluid, ejaculate. It's good times. It's all good. Relax. It's all just make sure you're just paying attention to what her needs are and just keep her happy. She'll be fine. It's all good. Jasmine,
yeah?
16, what's going on?
Okay, I've had sex with my boyfriend about 4 times.
Wow.
And I've never bled.
You sound like you're 7.
More jello, please.
Yes, indeed. Why? What happened to you?
Nothing.
Oh, come on.
I promise. More jello, please.
Yeah.
Nothing happened. I'm serious. I promise. I get that a lot. Like, one time I called this chat line thingy with my friend. We were just messing around. And then he's all like, get out of here. You're like 12. More jello, please.
12 is optimistic. No one left, died, beat you, sexually abused you, something?
No,
when you were like 6, 7 years old?
No.
Are you tiny? Are you 3 feet tall?
No, actually, I'm like 5'9".
Jasmine, there's something going on here. Anyway, we'll go no further. But people don't have to bleed when they have intercourse, particularly when they're big and tall like you.
Uh-huh.
So your hymen left a long time ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, because, like, the first time we ever did it, like, I bled a little bit, but yeah. I didn't know if that was it or not.
You don't have to bleed at all. Why the preoccupation with the bleeding? Why would people have
to bleed? I don't know, because, I mean, like, all my life I've heard, you know, oh, your cherry has to pop when you have sex, and, you know.
Yeah, well, it may not happen.
Okay.
Especially, you wait till you're old enough and tall and big enough.
More jello, please.
Yeah, that means something. Come on. This is Cody, 18.
Hey, what's up, Drew?
Good, Cody. What's going on with you?
Hey, my girlfriend is extremely, extremely needy. Like, we're hanging out with, like, a group of my friends, and she always has to have me right there, like, holding her hand or, like, talking to her, like, 110% of the time.
Yeah, it's not good. It's insecure more than needy.
It's kind of like that, and I have this friend that's a chick, and, like, we're good friends, and she can't handle it that I call her, like, my best friend.
That can be kind of tough, because, you know, when people your age that are male and female decide to be friends, it's usually because somebody's into somebody.
Yeah.
Was your friend into you, or were you into her?
We went, like, went my sophomore year of high school, which is, you know, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Or 2 years ago, rather. We kind of, like, saw each other. It wasn't, you know, it was just like a little sophomore crush, you know?
Who was it that sort of stopped it?
It was her.
Yeah, so you were kind of into her, and your girlfriend can kind of sense that. So
yeah,
it's kind of for somebody who's already insecure, knowing that you're friends with a girl that you were into, you know, if that girl just gives you a green light at some point, it's gotta freak out your girlfriend. What else she doing? Give me other examples. Will she not let you hang out with friends? Will she not let you be out of her sight?
It's the whole friend thing. She's cool with. Sometimes she has a hard time like letting me go. Like, you know, I want you to come over here. You can't. You know, you don't do that or whatever. And some, like, when we have sex, it's like she always wants to do it now, like all the time. And it's certain. It's like it's bugging. It's like there's points in time where I don't even want to because she just wants to all the time.
This relationship doesn't kind of work out with you guys. It's not kind of fitting.
I think I just needed to hear that because I was a little bit confused.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's making you happy.
Not at the moment, no. Not at all.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's making her happy, because she can kind of feel you pulling away, and she's fighting to bring it all back in. And
that's exactly.
Feeling desperate.
And yes.
I think, out of fairness to both of you, it's not healthy for her to sit in this relationship just pining for you and striving to keep it together. That's not good for her. Now, be careful. When you break this off, it's going to be difficult. It's going to really be kind of shattering for her. Not to say that you're responsible for her feelings.
Yeah.
But she sounds like somebody that's going to have a real tough time when the breakup occurs. And she kind of needs to deal with this stuff and be alone for a while.
It's like all or nothing. Like, we can either have a relationship or she'll probably hate my guts.
Yeah, I'm sure. Is she the kind of person that has to go from relationship to relationship to relationship?
No, I'm like her first boyfriend.
Well, maybe that's it. Yeah,
that might probably have something to do with it.
Yeah, but it's not working.
So. Yeah, I just don't want to be I don't want to be mean. You know,
how old is she? I know. No, listen, it's very unusual for people that want to hurt somebody in a breakup. But the fact is, you're not doing somebody a favor by letting them hang out in a relationship that's not really working. It doesn't really fit for you. And that's not really good for her either, because she needs to... She'd develop a sense of herself, some esteem, and go out and get somebody that really does, in fact, care about her. Not that you don't care, but somebody who really, really loves her, and that's not you right now. Angela, 23.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
So much. I wanted to thank you and Adam. I know he's not here, both for your sort of insightful and valuable both comedy and therapy. I think it's really great, and it's provided a lot of years of entertainment for me personally. So.
Oh, great. Well, my pleasure. Our pleasure. I'll answer on behalf of Adam. Can we hear from me? Wait. We can't cyber Adam ring in at you know sometimes here.
So maybe my question will provide entertainment to someone out there as well. But
what's up?
Maybe it's nutty or erotic or irrational and totally in my head. But I feel as though, and I've sort of been trying to keep a record of this.
No.
Like every other month, my period is like really, really painful. But then like the next, you know, it'll be painful, and the next time it'll be like, oh. You know, nothing, it's totally fine.
What are you going to do?
I don't feel anything. I mean, is that normal? Is it weird? Does it signify anything? Or am I just totally, like, obsessive about it?
You don't sound like an obsessive person. Are they heavier when they hurt?
No, it's about the same, but it just really, really hurts.
Does it hurt on one side more than the other?
Not that I've noticed, no.
Hey, it takes all kinds.
And is it both sides when it does hurt?
It's sort of, like, in the middle. Like, sort of, what do I want to say?
just a tightening of my stomach.
You're Mormon?
Like, not my stomach, my uterus.
Yeah, the
I'm not
going
to answer that question because I've listened to the show too many
oh
times.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The first person not to answer that question. Angela.
Unacceptable.
I don't know. Unacceptable.
She's unacceptable.
She's a genius and she's a clairvoyant. She's tuned to this show. The midline is usually the uterus, so that's
why you make the big
bumps. And that's in fact where a lot of the cramping does come from, is the, you know, the sloughing and the inflammation of the uterine lining and wall. Why you would get it?
Okay, it doesn't mean like I don't know. One of my ovaries is like freaking out. Or...
Well, it makes me wonder whether you're having certain cycles where you're not ovulating, perhaps, and somehow that's affecting how you experience how you know your biology operates on the months when you're not. It's kind of weird that it would alternate like that. I I'm not a gynecologist, so I'm not
right.
Don't have a ton of experience with anovulatory cycles.
That's why I make the big bucks.
That's the one thing that occurs to me, is whether you're not ovulating. If you aren't, so what? It's not a big deal.
Right, and that's fine with me. I mean, I'm not
planning
on.
Yeah, I you don't sound like somebody who would sort of fantasize facts. It's just one of those things. You're having painful periods every other month doesn't necessarily mean anything, actually. Philip, 24.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Hey, not much. True. I'm a long-time listener and a big fan. And it's really great that you're taking everyone's calls tonight.
Whatever.
I'm recovering from an eating disorder, actually.
Wow.
And I wondered how that might impact my relationship with... with girls, actually, but...
The fact that you had an eating disorder, or what?
Well, like, maybe the mental contributors behind it. Like, how might that impact the relationship?
Which are what for you? How do they...
I don't know. Like, I think it's some sort of a compulsiveness, controlling personality.
Yeah.
And that may have been kind of the trigger for it, because I tend to be very particular about things.
Yeah.
And, are people successful in relationships with that?
Well, you've been treated, so you must be more flexible and more available and regulating by other means than an eating disorder right now, right?
Except that I don't know at what point I'll actually have gotten over this. I mean, how do you know when you've gotten over it?
Well, you've never really get over it. It's considered a chronic condition, but you can certainly improve a lot and be in remission for long, long periods of time, and maybe, you know, eternally in remission.
I see.
The question then becomes, though, what are those things that are coming to bear that produce these deficiencies that drive you towards these compulsions, and has that all been treated properly? Are you a trauma survivor?
No, not to any extent that it would have impacted me, like, in my young years.
Any specific trauma? Was something happened recently?
No, it was, like, I mean, in my later teen years, there was some, I did get picked on a lot when I was out in high school, because I tend to be very, well, obviously was very small, and I got picked on a lot, and in one case in particular, it was quite disturbing, so.
You were small because of the eating disorder?
I don't know. I mean, I'm small frame anyway.
Oh. Yeah, Philip, I can't, just because you were anorectic, I can't say anything globally about your relationships. Some people are anorectic, some bulimics are hypersexual and have lots of relationships. Lots of bulimic anorexics are trauma survivors, and of course those things affect relationships. If you had very intrusive parents, which is sort of a classic circumstance for anorexia, yeah, of course that's going to affect how you conduct yourself in a relationship. But the most important thing is that you get treatment, you stay in treatment, and you keep some sort of long-term therapeutic relationship going, so you can continue growing and can be available for healthier relationships as time goes on. You sound okay now. Just kind of get out there and mix it up a bit. Let's go to Erica, 18.
Yeah, hi. I have a question.
Yeah.
My fiance can't get me off. I couldn't even have sex.
Unacceptable.
Okay. What?
Except
is...
you're eight when you have intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
That's you're expecting too much. That's not going to happen.
Okay.
That's not likely to happen. Have you ever had an orgasm?
Yeah.
And how do you do that?
And how do I do that?
Yeah. How has that happened in the past?
Not very many guys have been able to get me off. I think, like, out of the very few that I've been with,
yeah,
there's been, like, three.
How many have you been with?
Oh, God. Okay, there's been 26, but...
My goodness, you're 18. Wow, why all those partners?
You co-core.
I'm not sure. It's just, I don't know. I went through my stage, like, right after I lost my virginity, and then the first guy that gave me an orgasm, I just kind of went a little nuts, I guess.
What does that mean?
Well, after the first guy that gave me an orgasm, I just started, you know, going out after a little bit of everybody. I don't know. Like, I couldn't stop. For some reason, I just wanted more.
And why didn't you stay with that guy?
Well,
why?
He actually left me for a slut.
Okay, so you were traumatized by the guy leaving you that you were felt very, very connected to, right?
Yes.
All right, that's what tends to happen to women, is that they have a relationship, they open up, they feel real connected, and then when that person abandons them, that reenacts as some sort of trauma. Were you abandoned as a child yourself?
No, I didn't, like, really see my dad that often as a child.
That's called abandonment. That's what abandonment is.
Yeah.
And so that resurrects all those feelings of abandonment in an attempt desperately to try to reconnect. You go out and try to find... It's not about the orgasm, Erica. That has little or nothing to do with it. It's about the abandonment. And probably this guy that you're with right now is probably a real nice guy.
He is.
And probably really available. And that's very uncomfortable for you. You'd much rather be in the chase for the unavailable guy than be with the guy that is available. And as a way of sort of sabotaging that, let's focus on the orgasm.
Okay.
What?
Okay.
So the reality is, this guy, if you are able to have orgasm with intercourse or through oral sex, if you work with this guy, he'll be able to do that. You know what you need for him to be able to do that, and the probability is he'll be able to figure out how to do that. But you got to tell him. He doesn't automatically know exactly how you work.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess.
So see, you're angry. Yeah, you're very frustrated and angry with guys, and you're just not ready to have a relationship. That's the bottom line. You're thinking, but you expect me to tell him how to do this? Yeah. That's the only way it's going to happen. Unless you're with a guy who is dangerous and unavailable, then it might happen too, because that connects you with parts of yourself that you can't let this guy see right now, and you're just hell-bent on not showing them and not allowing it to happen. So there you go. You're not going to be able to be complete in a relationship with an available guy. You're going to keep chasing guys that are not available. That'll be very painful.
Huh. Okay. Yeah.
So just kind of work on this, and don't be open to it. Don't be so frustrated. Don't think that magically he's going to know exactly how you function and play you like some sort of cello. That's particularly an 18, 19-year-old guy. It's impossible. And the only reason you're able to get off with the other guy is because he was a bad guy, and that's not going to be a satisfying relationship. Yeah, this is again to bring up a little Adam Carollaism here for all the dads that don't parent. Here's what you get. That's it, Erica. Struggling, looking for something. A society that tells her that really the orgasm is that's what she needs, is another orgasm. And go find it in another guy, which only supports all this psychological desperation to find the unavailable male. Really, that's what you guys want? You fathers that abandon your kids and think other things are more important, spending time with your kids. That's what you want? That's what you get. All right, it's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. We'll be back right after this. Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. I'm Dr. Drew. Adam is not coming in tonight. Damn. All right. Let's take Caroline 20. He will be here tomorrow, by the way. And just to prepare you guys, we will have to hear about Italy for... Think you get it all in 20 minutes?
No, 20 minutes? I was going to say like 2 months.
2 months of it, yeah, 2 months. But I'm just wondering what we're going to... Whether we'll take calls tomorrow night or not.
I just hope he liked it and that maybe he was kind of bored so he doesn't have a whole lot. Because if he hated the country, we're going to hear about Italy and how awful it is.
There will be some adventure, I'm sure. Caroline 20.
Hey, Dr. Drew, thanks so much for taking my call.
No sweat. What's up?
Well, just a little bit of background before I ask my question.
Yeah.
I've been bouncing in and out of relationships since I was about 14, and they can be lasting for a year, a couple of months, or even just a night or two. And I've recently been involved in a 12-step program for alcohol and cocaine.
Okay.
And the program suggests not to be in a relationship for the first year because the point is to work on your recovery and find a higher power and all that stuff. So,
well, it's not just about working on recovery. It's that relationships, if they're going to survive, tend to keep you locked in, just the way sort of a lock and key fit together into whatever, whoever you are at the point in which the relationship starts.
Mm-hmm.
And the big goal in sobriety is to grow a lot during that year. And if you, at the end of the year, you will be attracted to entirely different people, different kind of person will be attracted to you. The way you experience yourself in relationships are going to be different. And if you lock yourself into a relationship early on, all of that gets sort of aborted or restricted.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
it's,
I mean,
really
I found
important.
It's a big distraction from the program.
Distraction, yeah, it's chaos. And it's, you know, listen, humans, nowhere is our craziness acted out more than in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever there is, the interpersonal is where it all plays out.
Right.
And so you want to hold that for a while and just work on an intimate relationship that is non-sexual, non-romantic, meaning your relationship with your sponsor,
mm-hmm.
and grow in that relationship, then take that over to the romantic realm and see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. But how do I break away from that fear of loneliness? Because my biggest trigger to relapse is being lonely.
Then you go to lots of meetings, have lots of contact with lots of people that really care about you. That you got to develop those relationships. Lots of them. I bet you have trouble with women generally too, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's always a competition. It's jealousy.
Well, let all that go. Let it go. Let it go and accept the support of other women.
Okay.
You've got to accept that, because that's the only that is your only hope.
Mm-hmm.
You keep using men. Men just become another bromide, another way of regulating your feelings, another drug. And that's what they are to you. They're either a drug or an acting out of primitive material.
It's also a matter of building self-esteem and confidence, though, because I often find that in guys. You know,
That's just validation. That's not self-esteem.
Yeah.
That's just, I'm okay. He likes me, I'm okay. That's nonsense.
Exactly.
That's a never-ending void you're going to have to always fill, as opposed to a genuine connection where you genuinely learn to experience yourself in an intimate dialogue with another person, another female, and emerge as somebody who can regulate her feelings, can feel a range of feelings that you couldn't tolerate before, and in the face of that competency, that self-competency, you will develop a sense of esteem, real esteem, not just filling a void, huh?
What do you think the reason is behind this, though? I mean, why? I mean, for the last 6-7 years, it's been like in one, out the other. You know, it's like just a constant cycle. And you're right. I mean, it's about filling that hole, but it's
those don't fill the hole. Those sustain the hole, and it's just acting out. You might want to read my book, Cracked. I do get into that a little bit in that book, and how people that need to be rescued. No, I don't get any money for it. Need to be. It is coming out in paperback in the fall. I might get money for that if it sells. Filling that void, it keeps you constantly in need of rescue, constantly in need of the men, just the way constantly in need of cocaine and alcohol. Trust me. I've seen lots of, maybe there are other ways to do this, and certainly individual psychotherapy is one of the things you could consider, but I've seen wonderful, wonderful recoveries in 12-step with that sponsor. But you've got to stick with it, and you've got to do the work, and you've got to follow directions. You have to contain the desire to go out and act out with men, and with alcohol and pot, or alcohol and cocaine in your case. Same thing. You can't do it. Nicole, 22.
Yes, hi. I love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
My question is, let me give you a brief history. I was molested by my older brother between the ages of 6 and 8.
Perfectly normal, perfectly natural. Yeah, that's good times.
Great. And then my father had killed himself a couple of years later.
I'm so sorry.
And I'm married now, and I have a 2-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
And I'm a bit terrified of leaving her alone with a male in my family.
Absolutely.
No, nobody in my family that has molested me, though. They're out of the picture. Just his family.
Oh, I see. Well,
So
not, you know, I don't want to support your paranoia. However, you having been abused does mean you're going to be attracted to people that are abusers. So in a way, you're keeping an eye on the child is an adaptive thing. On the other hand, you constantly needing to be over the child gives the child the message that he or she is not competent and cannot sort of move away from you safely. And part of the early childhood development, the most important thing is getting that support from you and then being able to move away from that home base, constantly checking in with you, but move away and develop some independence and competence.
Okay.
So it's a tough situation. Maybe there are other people around. You can surrogates you can trust. You've got to be.
Actually, I can trust them all. None of them are abusive. They have a very great, tight-knit family, actually. Nothing from my family. I just am paranoid when I'm leaving her. I can't trust anybody with her.
Well,
any male with her.
Well, again, it's not completely maladaptive impulses, even if you hadn't been abused. On the other hand, the child needs to see that you're okay. If it's shattering to you as you move away, the child is going to be in a panic whenever he or she is alone. And that is destructive to the child's development. So on behalf of the child, you've got to find a way to deal with that paranoia. Calm yourself, whatever you need to do so, or maybe even get some individual treatment for yourself. Obviously, you need it. You've been severely abused. All that stuff will reemerge now that you have a child. Children are extremely evocative of old material that you may have had under wraps for a long time. We have to go to break right now. Well, that'll about do it. Thank you for listening tonight. Thank you for participating and calling in. I think we got a little bit of work done for a change. I mean, not now. For a change, but what am I going to say? Adam will be back tomorrow night. We will hear about his illustrious trip to Italy for his 40th birthday, and I'm sure there'll be plenty to be discussed. And we'll hear. I'm anxious to hear from Thunderbolt or whatever that Indian's name is. I'm getting so good at translating him. I think that's very interesting to talk. Let him, the shaman, give us some words of wisdom. So this is Dr. Drew on behalf of Adam Carolla, who will be in tomorrow night, saying mahalo. Adam is not coming in tonight. Damn.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Ann Ingold. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.